The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning to you. How are you doing?
Well, I think everybody's getting ready for this week of Slichot before Rosh Hashanah. Of course, under very different circumstances this year. And the Kotel, I don't know if you guys have had a chance to see pictures of what the Kotel is looking like these days with the new capsulized, is that a word? Capsulized?
Capsulized,
format.
Look, in 2020, we get to make up words.
Okay. I mean, I've been practicing for a long time, so I'm happy that we finally got to 2020 when we can justify some of the words that I've made up. But yeah, I think people understand what I mean. And basically the Western Wall Plaza area has been divided into small compartmentalized areas, to separate people one from the other with dividers up. And the way that the authorities have decided to control the, influx of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people who like to come to the Kotel to, pray for slichot, forgiveness prayers, in the week before Rosh Hashanah. Usually there can be up to 100,000 people, for slichot. This year they are, raffling tickets. They're actually just allowing people in, on the basis of tickets that are being raffled off. You have to go online. You have to register yourself for the raffle. 2,500 tickets are being given away for any particular period of time. Only people with tickets will be allowed into the area. So this is the way that they're going to try and control things. It's just another piece of evidence of how 2020 is just, you know, completely different from anything we have ever seen before. Mm.
Absolutely incredible. What is happening with the COVID cabinet? What's the latest?
Well, they're due to meet tonight or later today, probably going into tonight, in order to discuss what will be happening over the Rosh Hashanah period. Rosh Hashanah, of course, begins in a week's time, next week on Friday evening. And it's not only about Rosh Hashanah, it's about Yom Kippur, which follows 10 days later, and then just a few days after that, Sukkot, and the holiday period of Sukkot, which is, has got its own set of issues and challenges. It seems from the rumors that are circulating that there is a huge amount of pressure on the Corona cabinet to enact a very, very stringent lockdown in order to try somehow to relieve the pressures on the hospitals. Another 3,900 new cases diagnosed just yesterday. 474 people are considered to be in a serious condition. More than 100 people are being ventilated, intubated. And so the pressure on the hospitals is really building. And the hospital managers are trying to influence and to pressurize the decision makers at the government level to enact a lockdown, a very stringent lockdown. The problem is, of course, that we run the risk of civil disobedience, because many communities have said, I don't care what you guys say to us, we're going to do our own thing. And that's not only coming from the level of the man on the street, that's coming from civil leaders, that's coming from municipal leaders, people who are running towns and cities are saying to the government, doesn't matter what you say, we are not going to adhere to your rules. We're going to do whatever we think is right. Some of that, I think, has been fueled by the statement that was made by Avigdor Lieberman that we discussed the other day, where he told people not to act according to what the government is telling you, but to act according to your own sensibilities and to your own logic. He was castigated widely for those statements, and I think rightly so, even though he really does have a point. The problem that we have is that people have lost faith in the intentions of the political level, in the rules that they're laying down. So if people felt that this was all being done in good faith, we're trying whatever we can. We live in a world where we don't know, but we're doing our best to try to protect you and to make sure that you are as safe as possible. And if everybody really believed that, I think that the general population would be happy enough or much happier to go along with the rules. The problem is that everybody's very doubtful about what the true intentions are that lie behind some of these rules, some of these leniencies, some of these compromises that are being struck. People are very, very suspicious and not supportive of the way that that's being dealt with. And as a result of that, you're finding that there's going to be elements of disobedience where people say, I don't care what we're being told to do, and we're going to do our own thing. So unfortunately, we're running into a very, very serious and dangerous situation. Some of that skepticism and civil disobedience comes, of course, from within the ultra-Orthodox community. The government stands accused of having failed to convince the ultra-Orthodox leadership to do the right thing. And once the leadership, or if the leadership would have been convinced sufficiently, the view is that the Hasidim would have simply followed what their leaders say. But because the government is saying one thing, the leaders are saying another thing, the followers are going to follow what their leaders are telling them, what the senior rabbis are saying, and not what the government is saying. And that's at the heart of some of the issues. But let's not only lay this at the feet of the ultra-Orthodox community. There are numerous people within the secular community who have the same feeling. People are just flaunting the rules. People are just doing their own things. And that's a dangerous situation. So it's going to be interesting to see what the decision is that comes out tonight, and particularly how that decision will be accepted, or how it will be received by the general public, because we run a very large risk here of, even if the government does make sensible statements and really do things, which is in the general interests of the public health, that people have now lost their faith in government decisions and will probably not follow whatever they're being told to do.
Yeah, very, very, it's just a crazy situation, because when a government has lost, the faith of the people, then they have no credibility, which means every decision is scrutinized, and people don't feel that they can rely on it. It's very, very concerning indeed. The Arab League has refused to support a Palestinian resolution that condemns the UAE for its peace initiative with Israel. This is an incredibly important moment, I think. How does this affect the Palestinian position with the Arab League?
This, I think, is a watershed event.
This
is really a moment that we need to sit back and say, what is happening here? And it didn't really start yesterday at the Arab League meeting. It actually started before. It started when the Palestinian Authority requested an emergency meeting of the Arab League already a couple of weeks ago to discuss the peace agreement between Israel and the United Arab Emirates. And their request for the emergency meeting was turned down. It was decided by the Arab League, by the powers that be within the Arab League, that this was not an emergency issue, and that it could be discussed at their regular meeting, which took place yesterday. Well, when that regular meeting eventually was constituted yesterday, and the Palestinian Authority proposed a resolution which condemns the United Arab Emirates for normalizing its ties with Israel, the Arab League refused to endorse the resolution. And so what's happening here is that we're seeing a real wedge being driven now between countries within the Arab League who potentially support a boycott-style relationship with Israel, a standoff, lack of peace, you know, war situation, call it whatever you wish. It probably encompasses all of those possible options, as opposed to those Arab countries who are now clearly moving in the direction of normalizing, within in inverted commas, you know, creating a diplomatic relationship with Israel, which includes, of course, the Arab League. Interestingly, Jordan, which already has a very old relationship and a very old diplomatic relationship with Israel, is considered to be one of the countries on the more conservative side, which are still supposedly supportive of the Palestinian cause. And of course, the Palestinians feel that those countries that are anti-Israel, that wish to boycott Israel, which wish to castigate and distance themselves from Israel, those are the countries that support the Palestinian cause, as opposed to countries like the United Arab Emirates, and now, of course, Dubai, is also falling into that particular category. And slowly but surely, we're seeing Saudi Arabia also becoming part of that group of countries normalizing relations with Israel. We saw yesterday an announcement by Jared Kushner, the president's son-in-law, that the United Arab Emirates and Dubai have both agreed to grant overfly rights to all Israeli flights without any particular limitation, which will make a huge difference to Israeli flights going to the Far East. But also there's a quid pro quo whereby their planes from Saudi and from Dubai will be entitled to have overfly rights over Israel. So they will also get an advantage in their flights that travel towards Europe. And so slowly but surely we're seeing countries getting closer to Israel all the time. And the Palestinians, while they maintain their stance of anti-Israel and anti-Trump and anti-the US, are actually being sidelined slowly but surely, and they are definitely feeling it. And they've really positioned this as perfectly as you could position it by saying that the Arab League needs to choose between the 2002 Arab Peace Initiative, which was proposed by the Arab League for peace between Israel and Palestinians based upon 1967 boundaries and you know, the proposals that were put forward at that point, or they need to choose the deal of the century, as they like to call it, which is the Trump Initiative, which is now being actualized through the relationship with United Arab Emirates, through the budding relationship with Saudi Arabia and so on. This is all part of the Trump Initiative, and they see that as being contradictory to the Arab League peace initiative from 2002. And so they're asking their Arab brothers at the Arab League, what are you guys choosing? Are you choosing the one that we proposed back in 2002? Or alternatively, because the two can't sit together, are you choosing the Trump deal of the century? And they are voting with their feet. They are, you know, creating relationships with Israel. They are warming ties. They are anti the idea of criticizing Arab countries that are doing so. This is, I think, a very significant moment within the entire development of the Arab world.
It is absolutely fascinating because it does show, and it's a message to South Africa as well, how antiquated and how out of date the long-standing position on Israel and the Palestinian conflict has been. By moving closer towards full cooperation with other Arab states, it is possible to see a situation where actually people can live side by side and they don't need to hate each other. Now, it's quite difficult because that means you need to shift that whole position to say, hold on, there isn't a victim and an aggressor here, as much of the world, including the South African government, has made itself believe. But actually, we could have a situation where that people can very simply wish each other well and cooperate. It was interesting to chat to the pilot as that flew that first airline, that first flight between Israel and the UAE. And one of the things that he spoke about was that was the first time he had had permission to fly over Saudi. And he said before that he had communicated to Saudi because they would fly there, the flight path would take them to the south of Saudi Arabia, but it wasn't that far from the border, so they would always have to let them know that they were there, which they would do, but they would never get a response. So he would always communicate with Saudi traffic, air traffic control, but they would never respond to them. And now for the very first time, he was flying over Saudi Arabia and actually communicating a two-way communication, and that in of itself was just an incredible moment. So
I think the big challenge in the Arab world, Howard, is re-educating children. We've been witness to decades and decades of a certain style of education to the upcoming generations about relations with the Jews and relations with Israel and castigating Israel and placing Israel in a certain position in the world configuration. And now all of a sudden, as ties warm up, the education process needs to change dramatically. And that is going to be the biggest challenge, I feel.
Absolutely. We only have 1 minute left, but I just want to hear about the 2,000 Falash Mura that are coming to Israel from Ethiopia by the end of the year. Just tell us quickly about this.
So there's some amazing stories about these Ethiopians, Falash Mura, who are still based in Ethiopia waiting to come to Israel. Would you believe that there are something like 8,000 members of the Falashmora community in Ethiopia who have close family in Israel and are waiting to come to Israel. 8,000 people. Now, we have a new minister of Aliyah and Absorption who is Pnina Tamano Shatta, who of course herself comes from Ethiopian background, and she announced yesterday that on her 100th day of being a minister in the government, that she's convinced the government to allow at least 2,000 of those people to already come this year, and another 2,500 to come by the end of 2023. There are going to be 4,500 members of the Falashmora community all in all who are due to come to Israel. A lot of them are suffering in Ethiopia, not only from weather conditions and from the traditional droughts that you hear about in Ethiopia, but of course now also from COVID, which has affected their community. And so there's a lot of pressure on Pnina and her team and, of course, members of the government, because she's really worked amazingly hard to make this happen. And so it's going to be interesting to see them come to Israel by the end of the year.
Indeed. It is 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. Wishing you a fantastic weekend, a Shabbat Shalom, and a healthy and peaceful time. We'll catch you on Monday morning.